music and everything this time.
All right, so I'll have to figure out a way of working something like that in for... Anyway. All right, so this is the Center Update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share a bit about what goes on behind the scenes, things that aren't necessarily evident for those of you who just are here on Sundays. So some of the things that are happening behind the scenes, for instance, as Jane has mentioned, we were gone last several weeks, in part for our Unity Convention that was held near Kansas City. And prior to that, we were at a Spirit Group Summit, in which Tara Weir, our Spirit Group's program leader, was honored and received awards on our behalf. And I just want to mention those now. She's not here today, but she knows that this is happening. And so the first thing I want to mention is that we, Unity Spiritual Center, were awarded the Glenda Engagement Award, which is an award that's given to those churches that have at least half of their congregation involved in some form of small group ministries. And so this was our first launch, and guess what? We blew everybody out of the water. We were the only ministry to get 50% of the congregation, and therefore we got this award. Yay! Thanks to at least half of you who participate in our Spirit Groups program. And then we received this, which is, you know, suitable for framing, with me in it, of course. This is an award for the 2015-16 Campus of the Year. We're considered a Spirit Group campus, which means that we had the most successful launch and implementation of a program in the Spirit Group's short history. So we're very privileged to have received this acknowledgement as well. Yay. In addition to that, Tara received her own personal award with respect to one of the five disciplines in Spirit Groups. There's five disciplines, including communion, community, connection, and compassion and challenge. Thank you. Those are Spirit Groups people helping me out. That's great. And so she received the Challenge Award, which is the most difficult award to receive, and it was for her effort single-handedly almost launching this program. And so we're honored to have her recognized for this. And so when you see her, be sure and offer your appreciation as well. In addition to this, this Wednesday evening at 6:30, we're having a Spirit Group celebration. So everyone who is involved in a Spirit Group, raise your hand if you've been involved. So that's more than half of you. You're all invited to come. We're going to celebrate our launch, and we're going to debrief our experience, find out from each of the groups what their service projects were, some of the fun things that they did, so that we all can share in that information. It's an opportunity for anyone who's interested in our small group ministry program to come and find out more about the focus of it. Its entire aim is transforming lives, and so we're excited about learning about some of the things that have happened for these groups. And then finally, one of the great things that we participated in at the convention was the honoring of certain recipients. And this year, the recipient of the Charles Fillmore Award was our very own Reverend David McClure. And please, David, come forth. Okay, and so I want to take a moment now and just honor David. He is the recipient of the prestigious Charles Fillmore Award, and it's been a long time coming and all the wonderful years of your service to the Unity Movement, and just maybe say a couple of things about what this means to you and anything else that you'd like to say in less than 1.5 minutes.
This award was for talking more than 1.5 minutes. But anyway. No, actually, it's a longevity award for being around for a long time. But it was truly an honor to be among my contemporaries and colleagues and those who have meant a great deal of me along my spiritual journey. I attribute a lot of my success to the 12-plus years that I've spent as minister in this church. Your inspiration, your support, your encouragement has meant a great deal to me and brought out the best in me. And so I accept this award on behalf of Unity Spiritual Center as well. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Congratulations, David. You have that back now. So in Unity Spiritual Center, we're privileged to have 5 ordained Unity ministers as a part of our community, Reverend Donna and David McClure and Reverend Jackie Green and Jane and me. And actually, between all 5 of us, we've been given 3 awards. So last year, Reverend Jackie Green was given the Light of God Expressing Award, which honors a Unity minister and our movement for their contributions. And then 2004, I was given the Myrtle Fillmore Award, the girl award. Anyway. All right. That was smoking hot. All right. Okay, so before I begin, I want to just share something that we learned while we're gone. Do you know that you can listen to our talk, 20, 25 minutes, and then in about, by tomorrow morning, you'll have forgotten almost all of it. And so I just realized that. And so I think of all the energy I put into my talk, you know, till now I'm ready to give it. And so it's like I'm going to give it, and then for the most part, you're going to forget everything by tomorrow. Unless you teach what I share. If you will teach what I share to somebody, even if you look in the mirror and just reiterate some of the things that you've learned, you'll retain what I've shared for 30 days, 90% of it for 30 days. If you'll just simply commit to the effort of sharing what you've learned to somebody else or your own reflection in the mirror. So with that said, I just want you to all put on your teacher's kind of awareness and listen from the context that you're going to teach this to somebody, okay? And so this is a continuation of a series called Making Your Mind Matter. And the idea is that unless we really are working with our life in the context of really examining our thoughts and feelings, our beliefs, and how we're being with what we're having, we're not intentionally engaged in the spiritual journey. That we have to bring our mind online to be a part of our spiritual walk. Does that not make perfect sense? And so today, my talk is specifically entitled "To Have or Not to Have." That is not the question. And we'll look at the question in just a little bit. And so what I'm speaking to is last time, you may recall, if you don't remember, obviously, you hadn't taught it to anybody. So to refresh your memory, last time I talked about Unity's 3rd foundation principle, that we create our own personal reality. Remember that, for those of you who are there? And you remember how we create our own personal reality. We create it through the thoughts and feelings that we have, through our beliefs, and through how we're being with what we're having. That's how we help to create what we're having as our personal reality. And you all agreed that was true, or at least you could see that that was true. But the fact of the matter is that we must not believe it because we don't work directly with our thoughts, our beliefs, and how we're being with what we're having when we're having a life experience that looks and feels against us. We do something else. We try to deal with the situation as opposed to looking at how we're being with it and therefore how we're interacting with what we're having and therefore how we're helping to co-create our experience. And so we can understand that dynamic. And so today I'm wanting to dive more deeply into the experience of how we're being with those moments that look and feel against us. And so let me ask you this question. How many of you have a difficult life situation in your life right now? Raise your hand. And how many of you know of a difficult person dealing with a difficult life situation? Okay, that's the rest of us. Okay, so if we were asked the question, where is the difficulty really, you would say the difficulty really in a difficult life situation is, you point to it, and you'd point to where? Right. Point to your spouse or point to your friend. Point to somebody else. There's where the difficulty is. Well, we know that that's not the truth. If you're new to Unity, our practice is to understand that how we be with what we have determines whether or not a situation is for us or not. And that when we are experiencing any discomfort in our experience of life, it's because we've either made the mistake of believing that what we have is who we are, believing that our experience tells us whether or not we're okay or not. Have you ever had your life experience communicate to you whether or not you're fine? Yes. Okay, you know what I mean. Or the other way in which we suffer is when we confuse ourselves with who we are not. In other words, when we're being our inadequacy, when we're being our unworthiness, whenever we're in our life being not enough, can we not see how we create in our life something that has to mirror that incongruence? In other words, when we're not being the truth of us, something has to happen in our life that exposes that incongruence. And we need to acknowledge that, yes, that's how it works. But then we need to realize that in practice, we do something totally different. It's like when we leave the room, all of a sudden, we're defending ourselves, we're needing to be right, we're having to have things be a certain way. Am I speaking to how it is? Yes. And so our effort needs to be to find a way in which we can be with whatever we're having and not feel diminished by it, so we can use what we're having to evolve and get to the next level. So regardless of how our life looks and feels, our effort needs to be able to be with that experience without pushing it away or needing to be different. Because the way it is unto us is the way it needs to be if we are to galvanize, if we're to show up in the magnificence that we've been created to be. And so let's talk about how to get to that place. And so Jesus uses a parable to describe how to be with our life experience regardless of how it looks or feels, and be with it as if it's unto us the treasure that we're seeking in our life. So he describes the kingdom of heaven, likens it unto a treasure that's hidden into a field, in which once this is discovered, a person sells all that they have just to buy the field and goes all in on wanting the field because hidden within it is the treasure. And so in our experience of life, you know, what field are we living in? And is the field that we're living in, is the field that we're going all in on really serving us? And is our treasure really there? And so as we talk about the field, we're really talking about a context within which once we arrive at this way of being that Jesus describes as the kingdom of heaven, it's his terminology to describe a way of being with what we are experiencing without feeling diminished by it, being with it because it's a portal into a field of infinite possibilities where all things work together for good, where exactly what is needed that moves us into the next level is right present with us. For us to be able to have that experience, then we can be with whatever we're having and not feel diminished by it and use it to move us into our next level of growth. And so here is another way of looking at the principle of the field within which our treasure is hidden.
We know that when we feel a feeling of love, compassion, understanding, forgiveness, when we change the self-esteem, that there is an effect from that, that it changes the electrical and the magnetic fields in our heart, and that those fields literally change the stuff that our world is made of around our bodies. And what the science now is showing is that when you can change the field that the atom is in, you change the atom, and we're made of those atoms.
Okay, so if we can change the field that the atom is in, we change the atom. So Greg Braden is talking about a principle that's found in heart math and in quantum science, that we can actually change the experience that we're having just by changing the context within which we're having that experience. So think of the field as the context of your life. And there's a term that context is king, in the sense that when, here's that slide, in the sense that when we have the right context, we amplify our capacity to be with whatever we're having out of a greater sense of integrity and presence. So, for instance, here's an example. Let's say that we're living in the field or the dream of insufficiency. And if we're living in the dream of insufficiency, in some ways that dream is a mirror unto our own sense of not enough. Can you see how that's so? And that when we are living in that context, then what we're having as our experience is always going to feel like it's not enough. I mean, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So in other words, the context within which we live makes us be with whatever we're having out of whatever the context supports. So if we have a context in life that says there are times when people are against me, then, for instance, when we are judged, then we're compelled to deal with that judgment as if it's an attack, right? I mean, think of the last time someone judged you. What did you want to do? Well, you probably wanted to push the experience away, create some distance or separation. Maybe you needed to be right. Maybe you showed up having to need to be right in the presence of that judgment. Or if it's a situation that is difficult, maybe you had to have things be a certain way. The point is, it's the context within which the dream is unfolding and arising that causes you to have to be a certain way in your experience with what you're having. But what if we changed the context completely and said that everything's for you? And so now when I'm judged, if I know the judgment is for me, I can be in the question, well, I wonder what this judgment is really about. Because when someone judges me and I know it's for me, it's got to be about what's missing for them. Or it's got to be about what's missing in our relationship. Or it's got to be about what I might have said or did that created some separation. And so if that's what a judgment is really about, in this context then, what is the right thing for me to do in the presence of someone judging me if I know it's for me? It's to say what? Tell me more. Right, tell me more. So can you see how there's a total different way of being with the dynamic of judgment just by simply changing the context within which I'm having that experience? The correct answer would be yes, you see that? Okay, we made it to that important pivotal point for the next points to be made. Okay, so the whole idea of having tends to suck us into this context of life as if what we're having is our reality or the truth of our experience. And so therefore, because having in some respects equals being, our well-being is impacted by what we're having in our life, right? And when you talk about, for instance, when you're sharing with people about what's happening with you, it's often our experience when we're having something that is great to talk about how great things are and how good things are, right? And when we're having something that isn't so great, that has a certain measure of discomfort or misfortune or sucks to be you associated with it, then we don't feel so good, and therefore our tendency is to enroll others into how it's so bad. Have you ever done that before? Yes, that's enrolling others. And so the point is that we reinforce the story, the belief, in the context that my life is against me, that life happens to me. And so if we understand that in the realm, in the dimension called having, and let's think of having as one dimension, there's another dimension called being. So we can either be in the mode of focusing our attention on what we're having as our experience, and therefore being defined by it, my condition is, if we talk about what condition our condition's in, we use it as if that's the truth of us. And so, for instance, I think about when I first got my cancer diagnosis. It was very easy for me to be in the context of thinking that something was happening to me. And it's very easy for me to then find myself in the behaviors that get triggered when I believe that I'm experiencing something that is sourced outside of myself, as opposed to being in the question, how is it possible that I've manifested this in my life? What's up with that? And so we'll get to some of those questions that help us go underneath what we're having so that we can actually see some value in the experience beyond just our conditioned response to how our life is. So when we think about these contexts, the first one is obviously, you know, life happens to me. And if that's our experience, and I'm suggesting that that's our default way of being in our life, that for the most part, when we're unconscious, when we walk out of this room and when we haven't had the opportunity to teach and reinforce this stuff, we then enter back into the context that the world provides us. And that is, your well-being and worth is defined by what you have, as opposed to who you are and who and what you've come here to be. Okay, but this context is not reality. This is a context that arises when we become fixated on the belief that out there is where reality is. So in other words, we become conditioned by virtue of our feelings to notice what we're having, because our feelings seem to arise in response of what we're having, as opposed to our feelings arise as a result of who we're being with what we're having. And this is pivotal. All right, so we're moving to a place where we can see that life doesn't happen to us, but there is another dimension, another expression. And here we have another sense that life happens by us. In other words, there's something that we can do with what we have. And so here's a silhouette of the superheroes in us. So when I received my cancer diagnosis, I immediately knew that there are several things that I need to be doing. And the last thing I need to be doing is sourcing my discomfort outside of myself. I needed to source my discomfort and the dynamic of my healing journey within myself. Now, it's not to say that I'm not going to be paying attention to things like symptoms and energy and my behaviors associated with what I'm having, my experience, but it begins with setting the intention that I'm going to have this experience from the inside out as opposed to from the outside in. And so in order to arrive at that context, I needed to be in the question, well, who do I need to be with this cancer in order for me to use it in a way that's going to benefit me? Because obviously, if I'm having this as my experience, it is here for me. There is a gift in it. And my struggle, should I choose to have one, is for me to be in right relationship with what I'm having, because it's here for me to use. And so we can think of this phase that life happens by us as being what it means to be on our cue card, what it means to be who we've come here to be, to know that there is some function for who we are with what we're having. That's why we have what we have, because of what we bring to the table of our being. The millstone of our own becoming is another way to think about this. And then as we begin to think about, well, what do I need to be doing to use this situation, all of a sudden it occurred to me that I needed to create a new body, because the one that I had was manifesting something that was not healthy. And so the things that became my action steps were things like immediately deal with parasites, eliminate sugar, eliminate alcohol, fortify my immune system, look at issues of the heart, involve myself in the healing codes, engage in the kinds of things that would give my body and my internal being what it needs in order to be able to use this situation to find ways in which I can honor and enhance my body's capability of managing the experience of having cancer without feeling diminished by it. And so as that journey unfolds, it's likely that we get in touch with another dimension of how to create context around how to be with challenging situations. And another context is what we could describe as life happening through us, that there is a purpose for whatever we have in our experience because something gets done through us that is a part of why we're here. So in other words, whatever we're having, regardless of how it looks or feels, one of the ways in which we know it's for us is because purpose is behind it. Purpose with a capital P. You know what I'm talking about when I say that purpose is behind your life? Purpose is behind what you're having in your experience. Whatever you're having in your life right now, there's purpose. And that purpose, it gets unleashed not by pushing away what you're experiencing, but by owning it, by getting in touch with the part of you that helped co-create the experience that you're having. And so, wait a minute, I'm getting some information now that somebody in the building is wondering, you mean I create my disease? You mean I create my misfortune? Well, don't think of it like you create it because you want it or you need it. Think of it instead that because purpose is, we have what we have because this is what brings us out, that brings us into the expression of who and what we've come here to be because we don't do that willingly, necessarily. And so what's required of us when we have an experience that is bigger than our self, our small self, is that we have to show up as our higher self. Something has to happen through us. And so part of what happened through me was an understanding that here I am, you know, minister, co-minister of a congregation, and here I have cancer, and I have to be able to use this cancer in such a way that I can, not only I, but we all bear witness that the things that we teach work, right? I mean, that's what we want to appreciate and value, is that this effort that we are applying to our spiritual journey absolutely works. And so as I see that through me, that teaching can happen, then I sort of say, okay, God, well, here I am, use me. And it's when we get to that place in our own personal life, here I am, Lord, use me, that all of a sudden a new dimension of life being for us opens up. And so I can't tell you how many conversations I've had because of what I've experienced in my own journey, colleagues and people coming up to me asking about my journey, my process, and learning about it and discovering that that there are options for people regardless of what the conditions are. It's a matter of you being authentically grounded and knowing that what you're having is for you and being open to the possibilities of seeing how that universe can support you in that journey. The final thing I'll say is that there's an aspect of context that opens us up to the awareness that life happens as us. In other words, we are the one. We are the expression of God. That all that we are is God. And we can most vividly understand this dimension or this context when we get in touch with our own capacity to be the way of God unto our life. And what do I mean by the way of God? Well, let's just say that one of the things that is God's gift to us all is love, and we are the way of God's love unto one another. And so for a moment, just imagine, do you have someone in your life that you love unconditionally? If you think about that person, probably under the age of 2. And so as you imagine yourself in front of this person and just feeling that love just coming forth, it's almost like you can't help yourself if it's real unconditional love. It just pours from you. But the reality is that's not you loving that child, but it's the activity of God loving through you. You are the way of that love. You are God as love unto that child. And it's from that child's perspective It doesn't get any better if Jesus Christ is doing the loving instead of you. It's the same because it's the same love. You are an expression of God as love in that moment. Now, if you just want to have a sense of another distinction, take somebody, set that child aside, and then bring somebody into your view that has hurt you. And notice that there's a different dynamic going on here. I'm thinking about a past wife experience I had. an attorney I was married to very, very briefly. Anyway, so it's different now. There's not this intention to be the way of God unto this person, right? And so what's in the way? And so what's, you're gonna have to teach this, Jan, so yeah, I got it. So what's in the way? So now our unconditional love is, set that aside. Now we bring somebody else here. Now that unconditional love's not happening. So what's in the way? Me. I'm in the way, and what am I using as me now not being the way of God unto this person? I'm using my own hurts, right, as evidence as to why I'm not going to be the one to be unto my life the way. And so I'm here to say that if there's anything in our life where we're not able to be unto it the way of God's love, it's likely that's a point where dis-ease is happening. So one of the things that I had to discover in the healing of my disease is that I had to go there. I had to go to all the places where I have yet to bring that same intention to be as God unto what I'm having in my life, the love of God. And so until we ground our teaching in that experience and demonstration of not only extending that love to ourselves but to all of those who are in our life, we have unfinished business. You know, and so one of the things that I did for myself is I had 6 external tumors as well as 30 internal tumors. And so some of my tumors were large enough to wrap my hands around. One was as large of an orange, and I had 2 the size of golf balls, and the rest were the size of marbles. And every night before I go to bed, I'd find all those tumors, and I'd just send them love. I just hold myself and love those parts of my body. And interestingly enough, Jane reminds me that's exactly what Myrtle Fillmore did to effect her healing of tuberculosis 100 years ago, which was a death sentence at the time. And so when we be unto ourselves, including our bodies, this avenue through which God's love can take place, we lift the context of our life into its absolute. And we're able to be in a benefactor of that absolute. And the benefactor of that is to create all things new. And so let's continue to unfold in this journey. And so now your effort is to teach some of this to somebody else. And so there's a number of ways you can do that. You can start taking notes now, because Jan and I are going to be pushing this idea that we only have a limited amount of time to transform our lives. And unless we remember these teachings and apply them in our life, it's going to be difficult. So you can listen to the recording. It'll be online after tomorrow, or you can get the CD and listen to it. And then teach the 4 contexts. The 4 contexts is life happens to me, life happens by me, life happens through me, and life happens as me. And also teach the 2 aspects of suffering. When I confuse myself with what I have, or when I be who I am not, I suffer. And then as you begin to sort of work with these principles, then find yourself coming back and involve in yourself in small group ministries, because our goal is that we translate these teachings into curriculum for small group ministries so that we continue to go deeper with these ideas. So with that said, nothing else is coming through. God bless you all.